Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk program presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Piedmont Medical Center is with us today, a community built on care, and you can find out more about them online at piedmontmedicalcenter.com. Very pleased to have with us, direct from the great hallowed halls of Asheville, North Carolina, Mr. John, I used to live in Rock Hill, Ray, who is now an accomplished author. At least we think he is. We're going to find out very soon. John, how are you?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you here. And, of course, there we go. Perfect. You have some deep roots in this community, do you not?
I was born and raised in Rock Hill. I practiced law here for several decades. And before I retired to Asheville. And I still have family here. My brother and his family live here. I would say that's pretty deep roots. And I've known you for probably as long as you've been here. What, 40 years?
Yeah, but you disappeared, you know, whatever it was, 15 years ago.
I retired in 2010 and moved to up near Asheville in Fairview, North Carolina, which is east of Asheville, around 2011.
You actually gave up legal practice.
I did.
You just had enough of it? Just couldn't handle it anymore?
Well, I'd always wanted to be a writer. So that factored into my decision to retire early. Okay. I love the practice of law, but it's very demanding in terms of the time you have to invest in preparation for cases and trying cases. So there wasn't a lot of time left to attempt to be a novelist.
So when you decided you wanted to actually write a book, did you ever talk to any other authors just to say, what am I getting myself into? What kind of expectations should I expect?
Well, sure. But my desire to write goes way back. I actually, when I graduated from college, I desperately wanted to be a writer. And I wrote a first novel, the typically... objectively speaking, poor first novel.
was that your brother's analysis?
His and everyone else's. But that was.
I bet your mama didn't say that.
She probably thought it was Pulitzer Prize worthy. But I was 24 and young and idealistic. But you know, that showed that I very much wanted to be a writer then. And then after that, I decided to go to law school because I needed to have a way to earn a living. So I wasn't going to earn a living as a writer, which is very difficult for anyone to do.
Oh, absolutely.
So I learned the hard way that there are limits to one's idealism.
Ah. So when you finally made this jump to get out of the legal business and into writing, did you realize that you had to be pretty disciplined in being able to finish a book?
Oh, absolutely. I had remembered from my youth trying to do it and how difficult it was. But I will say that all of those years of being an attorney, a trial attorney, did give me the work ethic needed to accomplish this task, which for me requires multiple hours a day writing. I don't put any limit on word count or try and accomplish that, but I think you have to show up at the desk every day.
Oh, yeah.
just like it's a regular job, just like anyone else, just like doctors and postmen.
But you can't, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, can you actually write for 8 hours a day, or you get spurts and...
Well, I can. I imagine there might be some people who can, but you can think about writing for 8 hours or really all day. You can think about what you're writing and how to edit what you've written, what you like about what you've written or what you don't like, and you're gonna excise. So it's you know, it can be all consuming, but I like to get away. I mean, I have to get away from it and go hike or, you know, do something else.
All right. So how did we come up with this book? I mean, what's this book all about? It's called Lifer, by the way. Just came out last month. Is that correct?
This month. June 10th. Right. Correct.
It even smells fresh.
Woo! Yes. Yes.
Has your brother read this book yet?
He has.
He has.
Did he write a review on it? It's got the family blessing. So. Of course, he might be a little biased.
How much did you have to pay for that?
If you'll notice, he's driving a brand new vehicle. So just kidding. By the way,
his brother's Toy Ray, well known around town.
Absolutely.
Husband of the lovely Grazier Ray.
Correct. Absolutely. Absolutely.
The quintessential Southern lady.
What she's doing with Toy, we still haven't figured out. But that's a whole nother broadcast there. But this book came to me really in a flash, Manning. I was actually working on another novel based on my experiences in New York City in the early 80s when I lived there right out of college. And it really wasn't working. Like I like to say, it was coming apart amidships. And I was a little frustrated by that. And then one night, out of the blue, the idea for this novel came to me, which made sense since I had been a criminal defense attorney for so long. But this is the story, Lifer's the story of a criminal defense attorney by the name of Jack Merritt, who finds himself in prison for life for murder. And so it's obviously a very serious book. He blames his current predicament on his older, charismatic cousin, Gil Hampton, who they grew up together and have this very intense bond. They're cousins, but it's like they're brothers. And I think Southern writers are somewhat obsessed with family dynamics and the power dynamics behind certain relationships. And when it's like brothers, of course, that's goes back to biblical times. There are a lot of complexities to this relationship that affect what happens during the course of the novel.
So when this came to your mind that you wanted to do this, did you sit down and start just scribbling out notes and trying to create an outline as to how this story is going to go?
Well,
creating characters as you went along?
It's interesting you ask that, because with every other book I had attempted to do, I had a very detailed outline. I thought that's how my mind worked. With this, I had the spark of an idea. And so I woke up early the next morning and just started writing the first chapter.
Okay.
And I just let it all happen. As the musicians say, organically. And during the course of writing the first chapter, the arc of the novel actually presented itself to me. The family saga, the intense relationship between the cousins, the crime itself, the love story between the narrator and his wife. There's a whole chapter in there that takes place in Charleston. You know, what a wonderful setting for a romantic story. But it takes place present tense in a prison, in a maximum facility institution called Congaree Correctional Institution.
How about that?
So very serious. As I said, this is as I told you before, it's a sad, tragic novel. Hopefully, that seriousness is buoyed by some dark humor in it, almost gallows humor, because a large part of the novel takes place present tense within the prison itself. And then he has flashbacks about what led him there, this is not a comedy special.
So when you started to present this to the publisher, did the publisher say, I think you ought to maybe take that part of this thing out of there and maybe go this direction with it or any of that?
Well, it was already fully formed by that time. It was either kind
take
it or leave it situation. Now, every publisher has their own editor. And I had a marvelous one, Tim Peeler, who works with Red Hawk Publications. But there really wasn't that much for Tim to do. He was very thankful because I had my own personal editor, Tom Rash, who I want to give a shout out to Tom, who is a marvelous editor. And he's actually the brother of novelist and short story writer and poet, Ron Rash. So he is Ron's first reader and editor.
How'd you
always
find him?
So, I'm very fortunate. I took a writing class, at the Great Smokies Writing Program through University of North Carolina in Asheville. And I had a marvelous teacher, novelist Tommy Hayes, who really encouraged me. He read the first couple of chapters of the novel and was very encouraging. And I made him swear that he wasn't lying to me, because I know teachers tell students all the time, oh, this is good, and maybe it might not be. But I knew that it involved, you know, over two years' worth of work if I were to actually, you know, pursue it. So when I was through with his class, Tommy said, you know, as you go forward with this book, you know, you're going to need a good editor. And he gave me Tom Rash's card, which was a great day for me. So,
and the editor basically goes through word by word, sentence by sentence.
Yes.
Chapter by chapter.
Yes.
And
yes. Very intensive, very personal, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. When somebody says, you know, I think that sentence sucks, you need to change that. Yeah. What were you thinking about?
Well, he's three times smarter than I am, so I, you know, so I... You know, I usually took his advice, but we came at this book really of one mind. We're so similar, as it turns out, and we're now great lifelong friends. I mean, I can see how the editorial process could, you know, blow a friendship up, but it made ours much stronger because, you know, his favorite novel of all novels in the world happens to be my favorite novel.
Which is?
It's called The Moviegoer by Walker Percy, which is the great Southern novel, in my humble opinion, and his. His taste in music is similar to mine. You know, his favorite album of all time is my favorite album. So we came at it with similar tastes, and I think that's important. And he understood, like me, he prefers voice novel, you know, first-person novels.
Sure.
Where you're inside the narrator's head, which is... To me, the most expressive and can be the most nuanced and evocative. So I've always liked, you know, I fell in love with first-person novels when I really started reading seriously, like in high school. So I knew I wanted to write one like that. So Tom Rash understood what I was trying to do with the voice of this narrator, and that was key.
I love this description here, pitch-perfect dialogue. What the heck does that mean? I like that, pitch-perfect dialogue.
That's a great compliment.
Mm. So. Memorable scenes. Very nice. That's a nice nice write-up there.
Well, so, I'm honored and humbled that someone of Ron Rash's stature would give me a positive review.
All right, so can you give us any inkling as to how this book ends without giving the whole thing away?
I think that's the one place I can't go in this interview, Manning. I'm sorry. The ending is something that...
Be a surprise.
Yeah, I don't mean that to be an obvious hook to your listeners, but I think it would be unfair to me, to potential future readers, to give away the ending.
All right, so the book is called Lifer, written by John Ray. I gather you can get this pretty much anywhere?
You can.
Amazon?
Yeah.
And
I believe they have it now at Corks, Cooks, and Books
in
Rock Hill.
Good.
Yeah, where I'll be actually on Saturday, July the 12th.
Uh-huh.
From 1 to 3 p.m., I'll be at Corks, Cooks, and Books. And I'll be in conversation with my good friend and fellow lawyer, Leland Greeley.
So that
should be quite a time.
Oh, jeez. Well, so, yeah. You were doing just fine until you mentioned
yeah,
Leland's
so,
name.
Leland Manning said that, not me. So.
Well, that's good. So is this part of your life now is to take Lifer out on the road and go wherever somebody will talk?
Yes, this is my first time promoting a novel because it's my first published novel.
Right.
This just seems to be part of the process. I've already been in Malaprops in Asheville, the famous Malaprops bookstore, last week, which was a great honor for me. And this Saturday, I'll be in Sylva, North Carolina, over near Western Carolina. And speaking at their wonderful bookstore there called City Lights. We're in the process of scheduling some others, in addition to here in Rock Hill on July the 12th, some others around the state.
So who puts those together? Is that your responsibility or is that the publisher? Or?
Well, that's my publicist is working on that.
Publicist.
Yeah.
Okay. So your team consists of an editor, right? A publisher, a publicist. What else am I missing here?
Well, let's don't forget my wonderful wife, May, who's had to put up with someone attempting to write a novel with all of its highs and lows and that come with that voyage.
So there were times when you would get up from the keyboard and take the book and throw it against the wall and say, I'm stuck. I got a brain freeze. I can't get through this, and it's all your fault. Honey.
Well, no, you can't do that because I chose to go down the path of trying to be an author. But some days are better than others. I mean, if you write something that you know is good or reasonably certain is good, that's a good day. But then there are other days that can be a little frustrating. I mean, any writer will tell you that, where it's, you know, you're stuck for whatever reason or you don't like what you're writing. You might be writing, but you don't like what you're writing.
Right.
So every writer, you know, from any given day might threaten to go to the incinerator and throw a manuscript in there, which many have, famously. But I never did. You hope that the next day is a better day. If, if Wednesday's not going well, maybe Thursday will be the best day you've ever had.
So there were days when you would just hit a wall and just walk away from it and come back the next day or a couple of days later and get at it again.
Correct, yes. And I think that's probably true of any serious writer's experience. It's the most apt description of it I've ever heard, and it seems more and more apt the older I get, was the great Dr. Hunter S. Thompson, you know who invented gonzo journalism, said that writing is like chopping wood. You know, you just show up every morning and it's work.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
always work.
But there again, I do want to reiterate that I think that having been a lawyer and used to long hours and hard work, that type of work ethic helped with attempting this.
So the book is called Lifer, written by John Ray. It's available just about anywhere, and he's going to be up at Corks Cooks and Books on Hurlong Avenue. I know, I'm familiar with it. And that's the 12th of July. You're going to be there then?
That's correct.
All right, we're going to go ahead and take our mid-program break. Remind you that you are listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax here with Founders. And our co-sponsor today is Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Good Pharmacy is with us, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Okay, a little bit of huggy stuff. Let's get on with the program here. We do fresh subs and saddles. We do them at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. How we do it at the count of three, the white letters together. Are we ready? 1, 2, 3. Slice, slice, slice. Garden. All right, back after these words.
Yeah. If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI and CN2.
There are lots of reasons why people like dining at Substation 2.
Such distinguished people frequent this place. Enjoy that, and the food is delicious.
The salads are the best in town.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
We hope you'll choose The Nest to deliver your newest bundle of joy. The Nest is a new labor and delivery recovery postpartum unit at Piedmont Medical Center Fort Mill, working to make your pregnancy and childbirth experience as easy and enjoyable as possible. Our physicians and nursing staff at Piedmont are dedicated to giving expectant mothers the maternity care they want and need. Learn more at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care.
When disaster strikes, one of the most important things is getting life back to normal. A little compassion can go a long way. Paul Davis is here for you. Paul Davis is committed to handling any property damage with exceptional care, because what we do is about more than property. It's about people. We have the training and expertise necessary to completely restore your property fast. For all your cleanup and restoration needs, call the experts at Paul Davis Restoration at 329-1140. Or find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
Now, parts of Western York County can enjoy Comporium's advanced internet technology every day. Thanks to the partnership between Comporium and York Electric Cooperative, parts of Western York County now have access to Comporium fiber technology that gives you the ability to stream, download, search, and conference quickly and reliably. Not only is Comporium fiber fast, it's also affordable, starting at just $49.99 per month with no connection fee. For details, go online to Comporium.link/YEC to sign up for Comporium high-speed internet today.
There are very few genuine money managers in America, and one just happens to be your neighbor. If you have $100,000 or more, call the professionals at Anderson Griggs Investments and see what a money manager can do for you. Anderson Griggs, 324-5044, or go online to AndersonGriggs.com.
Have you ever wondered why so many people enjoy dining at Substation 2?
Substation 2 is excellent. It's fresh. The buns just feel like they came out of the oven, and you can't beat the deli meat.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2. Cherry Road across from Winthrop. John Ray is with us. He is an author of a book called Lifer that he has just completed. Just came out this month, as a matter of fact. Available just about anywhere. And he will be showing up at Corks, I can't get that name. What was it called?
Corks, Cooks, and Books.
Corks, Cooks, and Books, right.
Should be a field sobriety test.
It should be. All right, so the title, Lifer, it comes from this guy being thrown in prison, basically, for life?
Well, a lifer is someone who is in prison for their natural life. Okay, they're not on death row.
Right.
Their sentence is to serve out the entirety of their life.
Okay.
So I wanted a title that was short, somewhat evocative. I didn't want a long, pretentious title.
Right.
But I think it fits this novel perfectly.
And the cover. Interesting cover.
My wife took that picture on her family's property down in Chester County, and this huge storm came up, and it looked just surreal, almost apocalyptic, and that seemed to fit symbolically, metaphorically, the cover for the novel, because the storm comes over this narrator's life as a result of the bad choices he makes based upon his misguided allegiance to his cousin.
Okay, so what else is cooking? Now you got this book out. How quickly do you get your brain fired up to go do another one?
Well, I don't know how fired up it is, but I am in the process of writing another. I'm about five chapters in, which is totally different from this book. Has nothing to do with Lifer. Going in a totally different direction, but like most writers, I don't want to talk too specifically about it, Manning, because you're always afraid you're going to ruin it if you talk about it, you know. If that makes any sense.
I got you.
Yeah, I know you want people to talk on your radio show.
It works. You know, that's how radio works, yeah. All right. So I want to get a little switch gears 180 degrees. Talk a little bit about Asheville. You live up in Asheville. Outside of Asheville.
I live in Fairview.
Tell me how that area is doing. Here we are, what, a year and a half, 2 years past the major floods up there?
It was, the only appropriate word would be devastating, catastrophic, okay? Near where I live, at the base of my mountain in Fairview, there's a little creek called Cane Creek, which on an average Wednesday, you'd be hard-pressed to call more than a babbling brook. Okay, you'd let your grandkids go in there and wade around in it ankle deep. From all of that rain, 3 days before the hurricane, and then the rain that came with the hurricane, turned Cane Creek into literally a wall of water that... you know, it washed people downstream to their demise. So that, you know, you would never think that when you saw it. So that brings it home. I ride right by a place where that happened on the way to the grocery store. So it's a constant reminder of the tragedy. Okay, that's my micro version. The big version, the macro version, is that it will take, you know, a generation for Asheville to recover. Now, everyone's spirits are very positive, but, you know, just the infrastructure and all of the businesses, I mean, there's so many of our favorite restaurants that have closed because they just can't make it.
Biltmore Village is gone.
Well, Biltmore Village was underwater. And they've cut down all the trees, you know, the beautiful entrance of those huge oak trees. They've cut those down. They were damaged so much. So the landscape of so many of the rivers and streams has been, you know, changed forever, the course of them. But I think that, you know, people's spirits are very positive. Everyone listening needs to know that Asheville is open for business. Things are, you know, coming around. A lot of the great restaurants are still open. Famous Kurite, Limones, Chestnut, all of these world-class restaurants. It's been a chore, but they're back open. So, you know, Asheville wants tourists back. And the Grove Park Inn, you know, all of the old guard are back and functioning.
So what about FEMA and the help that became a political football back and forth? Are they getting the sustained long-term help that they need to get this community rebuilt?
I think so. I mean, all of that became a political football, I believe, was just that. In my own limited experience, FEMA was there and did a good job. I know multiple people who they knocked on their house and said, what do you need? They were there and working hard. So I don't, you know, other people might have different experiences, but that has not been my experience.
Right. All right, John. Well, thank you for coming down from Asheville to be with us today. Good luck with your book. It's called Lifer. It's a novel by John Ray. You can find it anywhere, you know, Amazon or Books a Million or wherever. You can find it again at
Corks Cooks and Books.
Corks, that's right.
You can order it through my publisher, Red Hawk Publications. You can get it at Malaprop's Bookstore in Asheville.
Run out of time. We've got to say goodbye. Thank you, John Ray, for being here. Thanks for writing the book, Lifer.
Thank you, Manning.
And that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, Relax Here with Founders, and by Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. All right, now, John, you get a chance to do this one more time. It's called Fresh Subs and Salads. We do it 6 days a week here at Substation 2. Talk about lifer, we're a lifer here at Substation 2, right? Now, how we do it is in the white letters, and that's here for life as well. At the count of three, let's tell everybody out there why they need to be in here. Ready? One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden.
Have yourself a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.